Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. Now, let's join Dan to discuss this week's episode, Altar of Mortis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for all things Clone Wars. We're here to discuss the second episode of the latest story arc, episode 16 of season 3, The Altar of Mortis. And joining me this time are Arnie.
Hi, folks. This is Arnie, host of Star Wars Action News, the Star Wars Collecting Podcast. You can find it at swactionnews.com. And co-host of Marvelicious Toys, the Marvel Collecting Podcast. You can find it at Marvelicious Toys. That's Marvelicious Toys.com. And tune in next weekend to both those sites where we're going to be bringing all of the Star Wars and Marvel collecting news from Toy Fair New York, and this includes Clone Wars toys. We're going to be covering Hasbro on Saturday, everything else on Sunday at SWActionNews.com. Star Wars Action News, your Star Wars collecting podcast source.
All righty.
I should have normally just said hi.
That was a lot, man. Okay. All right. And Boy Everest.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, and I don't need this round table anymore. That was my best Ahsoka. How'd you
was
like
it? That was wow.
That was Ahsoka?
I was trying to think, when did the sun say that?
I was thinking the sun too. I thought Barrett was getting tired of waiting for Dan to die so he could become host.
All right. And Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. Back for the land of aliens, including ones that apparently glow. But enough about the halftime show. Let's talk some Star Wars.
Yes, we are going to be discussing the Altar of Mortis Part 2 in this very strange story arc that we seem to be getting right now. Before we jump in, let's go ahead and get a plot summary for this week's episode. We join Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka attempting to leave Mortis. Aboard the shuttle, Anakin has a dream where he has a conversation with the sun, disguised at first as himself. When Anakin refuses to join the sun in his dream, he wakes up to find the sun aboard the shuttle.
Leaving so soon. Not without this you won't.
The sun leaps from the shuttle with Ahsoka in his grasp. As Anakin and Obi-Wan pursue the sun, they crash their shuttle and are forced to carry on foot. Anakin wants to pursue the sun, while Obi-Wan believes the father can help them. Unconvinced, Anakin goes towards the sun's tower, while Obi-Wan stews about what should be done. In the sun's dungeon, Ahsoka finds a strange little creature who encourages her to forget her master and accept that she is trapped there for the rest of her life. Ahsoka assures the creature that her master will come for her. When the creature releases her, he tries to convince Ahsoka to give up. During a moment of confusion, the creature bites her, and as she collapses, it reveals itself to be the sun, and Ahsoka is now under his control. When Obi-Wan wonders aloud how to find the father, he sees they have crashed at the base of his tower. Convenient. Above Obi-Wan, the father and son are in disagreement as to how far the son has fallen to the dark side. When the father reminds the son that he could contain him if necessary, the son notes his father's failing health.
You look frail, father.
I am not dead yet.
Well, perhaps I am
tired of waiting!
With a blast of force lightning, the sun sends the father flying right to Obi-Wan's feet as he transforms and flies away. Inside the tower, the daughter does what she can to make sure her father is resting soundly. Obi-Wan tries to convince her how far her brother has fallen. She is initially reluctant to accept the truth. Finally, Obi-Wan convinces the daughter something must be done. She leads him to a cave with a deep canyon, in the middle of which, surrounded by flame, is the Altar of Mortis. The daughter cannot approach, but when Obi-Wan crosses to it, he receives a dagger capable of killing a Force wielder. Meanwhile, Anakin has reached the sun's tower and finds Ahsoka is not exactly herself.
He said, if you don't join him, he will kill me.
I won't let him.
Then you will be forced to kill me.
As Anakin fights Ahsoka, or rather defends himself against her, the daughter and Obi-Wan confront the son. She asks him what he has done.
Done? I've done what is right, or what is wrong, depending on your point of view.
The son admits he might have had something to do with the condition of their father.
He is just so selfish and was taking too long to die, so I decided to move things along.
When Obi-Wan offers Anakin's help to contain the son, he's informed that Anakin is a little busy right now. Back at the son's tower, things are getting a little more intense.
And now, the student will kill the master.
But Anakin isn't quite ready to die just yet.
Getting ahead of yourself, aren't you, Snips?
Don't call me that! I hate it when you call me that!
We all do, Ahsoka. We all do. As Obi-Wan joins the fray, the son reveals that their fighting is just fueling him, and he begins to fight his sister. All this fighting has woken up the father. When Obi-Wan suggests that they cut the son's hold on Ahsoka by killing him with the dagger, Ahsoka demands it. Elsewhere, the son and daughter continue to fight until the father intervenes, throwing them both out of a window into the courtyard where Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka are fighting. As the son attacks the father, Obi-Wan tosses the dagger to Anakin, only to have it intercepted by Ahsoka, who gives it to the son, and he rewards her.
Thank you. Your usefulness has come to an end.
Then he kills Ahsoka. The end. Best episode ever. Oh, wait, there's more. As the son lunges forward with a dagger to kill the father, the daughter jumps in the way, and she is stabbed instead. As she falls, the son flies away in anguish. Anakin is more concerned for his fallen Padawan, and after pleading with the father, he allows his daughter's final act to be to breathe life back into Ahsoka. So very close. Father then warns the Jedi that since his daughter has fallen, and his son's power grows, war will accelerate, and the Sith will gain power as well. He urges him to leave so the son cannot use their ship to escape, while he mourns all that he has brought about. All right, so why don't we go around and get everybody's initial thoughts and overall opinions on this week's episode, and why don't we go ahead and shake things up a bit. We'll start off with Nathan, actually.
I never get to do this. You know, I actually really enjoyed this episode. It didn't wow me the way that some of the episodes in the Savage Opress ones did, at least the ones we didn't see most of prior to viewing the actual episode. In this case, I went into it not really expecting a whole lot of answers. We didn't get a lot, but we got some, and that was enough for me, really. I think it's really, it's like Arnie said in the previous episode, now that we've seen the second third of this movie, so to speak, we're able to put it more into context, and now that we're able to do that, I do find that I'm liking it a little bit more than I did last week. So I'm looking forward to next week and discussing this week.
All right, Arnie?
You know, I liked this week's episode, but I'm not quite as excited as I was last week. You know, like I said last week, it's hard to review the first third of the movie, but by the time you're two thirds of the way through the movie, you start to get a good feeling or a bad feeling. And I'm liking how they're doing what they're doing, but I'm not sure I'm liking what they're doing so much. And I'm sure we're just going to go into a lot of detail as we go through the show. So I'll just say right now, I'm at a solid B minus on it. I'm liking it, but I'm just really nervous, and there's some things that just aren't striking me entirely right.
All right. Barrett, what did you think?
Well, I guess I kind of had the opposite reaction. I thought there was a lot of wows. Like, wow, when is there a Harry Potter character in Star Wars? And they turned him blue. And then we never see him again. That was a wow for me. There was a lot of wows. And I kind of, I like what they're doing. It's just, it doesn't feel Star Wars-y enough. And it should, because it's the Force. You know, and the Force is something that I thought I understood. And I don't understand. What I thought I understood is nothing what I thought it was.
It makes no sense, but the first step towards knowing the Force is knowing you can never know the Force.
Yes, and I guess the first thing to knowing the Clone Wars is to know that I'll never know the Clone Wars. But as far as, like, the story that we're getting, what we're getting, I don't think is losing quality at all, you know?
All right, I like this episode as part of this arc, like Arnie referred to. This is a good second chapter. This had a lot of elements that a lot of middle act things have, like Empire Strikes Back. We saw the death of the sister, and that's kind of left us in a strange place. Where is there going to be balance? The father's almost dead. The son's gone crazy. This is a good middle part for this story arc. As far as being Star Wars-y, it's still kind of in an odd place for me. I still feel like we're in the middle of a strange alternate universe, Final Fantasy weird thing going on. But I'm all right with it. I'm okay. It'll be interesting to see how it all wraps up next week. Looking forward to that. But we'll go into that when we discuss the preview. So this episode actually started out kind of strange. The newsreel was actually a full recap of events that happened last week. No surprises, nothing different or inserted that we didn't see in last week's episode. It was straight by the book, all what we've already seen from last week's episode, just in case you missed it.
Can I say a couple of things, though, that the newsreel did for me? It solidified everything that we saw, because when you have an omniscient narrator, which I'm assuming the newsreel narrator to be, and he's saying, the son is dark side, the daughter is light side. Well, at least that's, you know, last week we were having all these conspiracy theories. What if the daughter is really dark and the son is really light? You know, all these things. It solidified that last week there was no trickery. There's no Kaiser Soze going on here. What we saw was what we got, and we knew that. Now, it still may all be a dream, and the omniscient narrator, Anakin's dreaming of Tom Kane, but it did remove from my mind any conspiracy thoughts about last week.
There was, though, one thing about the opening crawl that sort of confused me a little bit, or at least shifted my perceptions from last week, and that is that it doesn't seem as though these characters are essentially avatars, embodiments of light side and dark side, because we're told the daughter is aligned with the light, and the son is, I forget the exact wording, but slipping ever closer to the dark or something along those lines, as if somehow he's not as fully dark as she is fully light. And yes, these are really force-using beings, not just embodiments of the force itself. I will also say, though, that at the end of the newsreel, we got what really didn't seem was clear at the end of last episode, if you hadn't seen the preview for this week, which was where the narrator says something along the lines of, they're now leaving for home. Or are they? Right? You get that kind of underhanging menace that sets up this episode. It didn't feel like we left the end of last episode, had we not seen the preview, thinking, gee, will they be able to leave? Because they just kind of pack up and go.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that it was more something happened to keep them there rather than, oh, they just can't find their way out. They keep flying forward, but they keep ending up in the same place. Kind of like, what is it? I'm wanting to say it's a Star Trek movie where they're flying and they drop the sensor and then they come back around and it's right in front of them.
It's an old storytelling trope. It happened in Star Trek. It happened in Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. It happened in The Blair Witch Project, you know.
So yeah, to see them just fall back on that would have seemed a little bit undermined. It would have just reinforced that this really could all just be a dream. And honestly, when we saw Anakin dreaming, I thought, wow, they're now going to tell us this is all just a dream.
One thing that also I had to sort of scratch my head about was, okay, they're trying to leave this realm that is inside the monolith. The monolith had to open to let them in. Aren't they running the risk of, like, slamming into the inside wall of the monolith and not being able to get out?
There is that. You could have just blown the ending for episode 3.
Yes, I could have. It's like, what is it called in Star Trek, to make another reference? Isn't it a Dyson sphere was the phrase for it? Like a world inside some kind of construct. Then again, we are told this is a realm, and we get another instance here near the end where they're referring to what this could cause on the outside, and it's like they're outside of the normal galaxy. So in all the different phrasings here, it seems as though this is more like a portal they've gone into, or some sort of like microcosmic universe or something that they've gone into. Either way, if it had to open to let them in, wouldn't it have to open to let them out? I highly doubt they just left the door open afterwards just to let any travelers zip on in there and mess up the balance of the force.
That'd be interesting. That's something that did strike me as odd. The father and the son refer to this realm or this place. The daughter consistently says things like, you are not going to leave this planet. Little bit of inconsistency about what this thing is.
Well, it's a planet in a realm, in a pocket universe or something, in a monolith, in space, in like a space Bermuda Triangle, so that Rex couldn't be there when they were there. Of course, it's totally clear.
Of course it is. What was
as
I thinking?
Clear as the plot of the X-Files, my friends.
You know, they kind of make it seem that the son has a choice whether he could turn or hide. And And in contrast, on the same side of the coin, that makes it so the daughter has a choice to turn from the light side. But, you know, the only issue I had with the son is that he is supposed to be the embodiment of the dark side of evil. Evil, dark side, Sith Lord, you know, and he's supposed to be the ultimate Sith, or he is what Sith come from. You know, they use him as their power. It just didn't seem like he should have that choice. You know, he shouldn't have any conflict within him. He should be evil. And I kind of got a conflict, which made him less powerful to me.
But at the same time, to toss in, and I don't even know if we mentioned this last time, remember, we keep talking about this whole Eastern philosophy tie-in here, and how in a sense what you're getting here is almost like a Taoist type of perspective here. Yin, yang, even going so far as to have the genders of son and daughter match yin and yang with dark and light, the way that it's presented in the philosophy and such. But another thing coming out of Taoism, and this is something that Lucas even reiterates in some of his interviews about the philosophy behind the Force and such, is that within good, there is a seed of evil. Within evil, there is a seed of good. If he was purely one or the other, then what you'd be dealing with here is a character who is, granted, easy to distinguish black or white, but B, not very complex, and also wouldn't fit with that Eastern philosophical bent that we're getting with these episodes. The dot in the yin-yang of each individual opposite color, so to speak. I think it's called a chijitsu or something like that. I forget the name of the actual symbol, but the Taoist symbol.
But then at the same time, wouldn't the light side, the daughter, wouldn't she show some sort of evil?
But she gets angry and she fights, right? I mean, that's at least a little bit. She does.
Well, that's the Jedi. The Jedi get angry and they fight, but they're not evil.
Well, she does have a little bit of evil in her. She takes Obi-Wan to a cave to show him where the dagger that could kill one of them is. That's a little dark for a light side chick.
Enough with the caves, okay? Enough with the caves already. It's a cave.
Do you have claustrophobic issues, Barrett?
I didn't see what was so special about this cave. It wasn't that hard to find. There's nothing special about Obi-Wan Kenobi to get this.
I was getting flashbacks to the Golden Child and the Dagger of Ashanti.
Thank you. I totally saw that as soon as, like, wow.
When he has to reach into the fire.
Does it bite his hand too?
But there's nothing special about Obi-Wan.
Except he's not part of the balance. I'm sure we'll hit this whenever we get to that part of the episode, but he's not part of the balance between them. He's not one of those three Force users. He is outside whatever their integral connection is. So in theory, he could go in to get it. If it's been set up so that they themselves, these powerful Force beings, can't get it, you need for lack of a better term, a lower life form to get it. But we'll get to that, I'm sure.
If we begin the process, yes. That would be an important thing.
At some point.
Well, and why don't we kind of get into it? We've kind of gotten ahead of ourselves, but we've brushed over a few of the things. For instance, the dream. Anakin is approached by the son in his dreams, who takes on, at first, the appearance of Anakin himself, trying to coerce him to join him in the dark side, not necessarily to make the dark side stronger, but he makes it sound as if Anakin assisting him and the dark side will bring the balance. That's a little bit of an odd thought.
So help me God, when this vision started, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we got to see Ahsoka with old Ahsoka, and we older Ahsoka, not like ancient or elderly Ahsoka, not senior citizen Ahsoka, but we got to see Obi-Wan with Qui-Gon. How cool would it have been if Anakin's vision was Vader? And I'm thinking to myself, oh, that would be so cool, because they love to put Vader on merchandising. If we had a Clone Wars Vader, they could make a Clone Wars Vader action figure. They could use Vader iconography on packaging. It would be a marketing guy's wet dream. And then we see the trailer for next week, and hey, there's Vader. So they just, I beat them to the punch by a week.
Well, I like the whole dream / vision thing here with Anakin, because there's a lot of different elements to it that speak to other aspects of Star Wars, not EU stuff specifically, except in a small case here, but within the overall saga that George Lucas has put together. You've got the echo of the line from The Empire Strikes Back. You've got him saying, join me and we can change the balance of the universe, my friend, as opposed to join me and we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy, which is a similar concept with the implied my son to that one. Anakin says, I will never join the dark side willingly, which somewhat goes in the way that he is portrayed within Revenge of the Sith, in that he feels as though, granted, he's making a choice, but he's propelled along by this love of Padme and this idea that there is only one way to save her, which, at least to a degree, fits in with this idea. Granted, it's, again, it's a choice. It is willing, but certainly it's a coercive one, even if it's coerced by the universe as a whole. The sun here is referring to balance as bringing peace to the universe, very much like what Anakin says to Obi-Wan on Mustafar before their duel, and as Palpatine says to him earlier in Revenge of the Sith, the whole idea of the dark side and will bring order and peace. And he's got that wonderful line in there with the latter half said in sort of a Palpy-esque voice, which was, you will destroy the Sith and the Jedi. It's definitely, it's digging deeper into a lot of these elements that we hadn't seen before. Plus, you've got him talking about the idea of light needing dark to exist, which, aside from being tied into Jedi and Sith philosophy, is something that was explored quite a bit in recent Star Wars publications, like the New Jedi Order and such, with the idea of a unifying force. And is there really such a thing as a light and dark side, or is it more your intention shaping the way the force works through you? There was a lot to like in that scene. It was possibly my favorite scene in the episode. I don't think so, but it's definitely ranked up there maybe among the top two or three.
You know what I found most interesting about that, the dream sequence, is that, you know, all up to this point, every time somebody says to Anakin, you are the chosen one, he's kind of scoffing. He's kind of, you know, the chosen one's a myth. You know, he's actually said that. But in this dream, when he has his future self or his other self, or, you know, the brother kind of doppelganging as him, he says, you are the chosen one. And Anakin has this smirk like, mm-hmm, I am the chosen one. And I was like, wow, this is the first time where Anakin's, you know, he kind of likes it. He liked the fact that he was being called the chosen one. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's true. And that does, it sort of goes back to, we see a little bit of that type of acknowledgement in the film where you've got Anakin, granted, whining quite a bit to Padme about how he could go further. Obi-Wan's holding him back and he's throwing stuff in a tantrum and everything. You definitely get to see a little bit of that in the films. You know, the Obi-Wan would be very angry with him slicing up the food and floating it across the air and such, which I'm assuming is because of using the Force too much, not, you know, because Obi-Wan's on a diet. Atkins would not be pleased.
You use the Force for knowledge and defense, never for flirtation.
Hey, tell that to Satine.
Hey.
Hey.
All right. So Anakin wakes up and it is only a dream. And apparently Ahsoka's there watching over him. He turns his back for a moment, turns around, and there is the sun who transforms into his gargoyle form and takes Ahsoka, theorizing that Anakin will not leave without her.
He doesn't say you won't leave without her. He refers to Ahsoka as this.
This.
I like nice. That idea of him just basically saying, you know, all these other beings are playthings in this grand scheme that involves us and you, chosen one. I like that just little word choice being so dismissive.
I like that too.
So the sun takes off with Ahsoka. They're in hot pursuit through the clouds and towers and mountains and whatever. There's a strange sequence where Obi-Wan doesn't think Anakin sees a tower, and they both try to steer in opposite directions. Which, why are there two steering wheels that can go in opposite directions on the ship? Really?
Is it the driver's ed version of the flight craft? I mean, is that what happened? I couldn't even figure out why they crashed. Is it that the instructor grabbed the wheel and they just both went the other way?
Yeah, that's how it appeared to me. I went back and rewatched that scene again, and it looked like, because I couldn't understand why Obi-Wan was apologizing. Sorry, I didn't think you saw it. So it's not like you screamed like a girl and jumped in his lap. You grabbed the steering wheel and tried to go the opposite direction. And as far as I can tell, that's what made the shuttle wig out and crash, which apparently if the sun thinks he's going to take it, it's intact at some point.
And we thankfully didn't get another happy landing. They're reusing a lot of those lines, like always on the move when Anakin takes off momentarily for the tower. They're reusing them a lot to the point where it's really getting annoying. It's not like a catchphrase that they would normally use. It's just, here's an offhand comment that I tend to make way, way too often. I will say, though, I'm pretty sure the reason this particular shuttle crashed, or why it was a shuttle that crashed, I guess is the best way to put it, as opposed to another vehicle, is because it was going to get mostly destroyed. My initial thought last episode was, why aren't they in the twilight? That ship has barely shown up in the series since season one, and it's supposed to be Anakin's ship. It's his go-to ship. It's what he flies. We saw Obi-Wan as part of the crew at times. It's usually Ahsoka and Anakin. Where the heck is the Twilight? And it's simple. The Twilight can't be destroyed like this shuttle can. It's like every other time we saw a ship swapped out for the Resolute, except for the one instance in which the Resolute finally got destroyed. No, they're constantly doing this kind of stuff. there. It's basically, if you see an unnamed vehicle, expect it to crash. If you see an unnamed character, expect him to be cannon fodder. And sometimes it'd be nice to get some peril for the vehicle. It would have been nice to see the Twilight be what he's flying there and have that be what crashes and that be what they need to worry about repairing, because it would give us some connection to the ship. I mean, it's this series' version of the Millennium Falcon, just on a smaller scale.
And also, since we are this close to episode 3, if something happened to the Twilight and it was taken out, it would be all right. So we're in the dungeon or whatever of the Sun's Tower, and Ahsoka is there and approached by a small creature who we'll find out later is the Sun, just in disguise. Don't tell Ahsoka. He releases her and then bites her, and his Sithy saliva takes over her mind and changes her to a dark side puppet of sorts.
I told you all it would be some sort of control. I told you all.
Yes, but at least they handled it in a well-done way in the episode. You said it last time when I was complaining about the fact that it wasn't going to be something in the main universe, so to speak, or it have to be in this realm, but at least they pulled it off better, as we'll see as we go along. I will say, though, that there's a lot of concern about, you know, he's biting her and that's what makes her Sithy, but these characters seem to be doing a lot of things by touch, you know, tapping of foreheads and that sort of thing. It just seems like maybe that's a dark side way of touching. I'm hoping they're not trying to say that he's literally infecting her with darkness. Otherwise, how could he thump her forehead and take it away later?
That was, and we'll get to that too, but that was another thing very reminiscent of Mother Talzin with these folks. But we will get to that. So we flash over to a meeting of the Force wielders in the tower, and the Sun is, he's a really quick mover. Of course, as we saw, they're apparently not that far away from each other. They live right next door. And the father is concerned that his son, who represents the dark side, is getting a little too dark. That's a little bit of a contradictory term, isn't it?
But he's not representing, that's what I was saying, that this episode, the way that it portrayed these characters in the opening narration is, yes, in a sense, they're symbolic of the dark side and the light side, and they're aligned, and they're representing that balance, but it's not like they're avatars of the light side or dark side. These are just really powerful force beings who happened to be there, and their internal conflict has an impact on everything else. So, yes, he is the dark side character of him and the daughter, but that's not to say that he is entirely consumed by it. That is not to say that he can't lean back from it, that he's not slipping in a direction. This scene and the opening crawl certainly, at least to me, solidify that these are not avatars in the religious sense. These are individuals being pulled in their particular directions or sliding in their particular directions by their choices. The daughter says her nature is selfless. The son's nature is selfish. Their nature and their personalities is driving them towards the sides of the force. I don't see where after this episode we could think of them as literally being embodiments of either side. Affecting both, yes. Embodiments, no. Not to mention, it was just really cool to see a scene with these three characters in it. It's very rare for us to get a perspective scene that's not from the perspective of our main Jedi characters or like Dooku or Ventress or someone like that. It's incredibly rare. And granted, it felt a little weird to have a scene just from the perspective of those three, but I think it was needed exposition to make the whole episode and trilogy make sense.
Well, and Obi-Wan was on his way, so we had to get the background for the family meeting that he was going to come up on the end of and see how that turned out, which we saw when the Sun whips out his red force lightning or pink force lightning, depending on your resolution, and just
Valentine's force lightning.
There you go. So the Sun makes an attempt on the father's life. I like the way he puts it later. The father just wasn't dying fast enough, so I decided to help him along.
Reminded me of the old, what is it, Stephen Lynch, the Grandfather Dies song?
It's more direct than Fatty Foods, I will admit.
That is true. Very true. So Obi-Wan comes in to find the son has attacked the father. The daughter is distraught, and Obi-Wan informs the daughter that son is trying to influence Anakin to shift the balance.
They basically have clarified finally in this episode that the danger is twofold. We kept going back and forth last time on what's the danger. Is it that the Sun gets really, really powerful and leaves and causes problems? Or is it that somehow him shifting towards the dark side more and the dark side gaining power inside this realm causes the rest of the galaxy or our galaxy, whatever, to be shifted toward the darkness? And it turns out apparently that it's both. The father essentially, in different places, and the daughter in different places here, is clarifying that, yes, if Mortis goes dark because the brother is gaining power, the son is gaining power, the universe will slip into darkness. As the balance of this world crumbles, so shall war escalate in your galaxy. As my son has descended into the dark side, so have the Sith gained strength. But at the same time, they're worried about the son being able to escape, and specifically mention him trying to use their ship in which to do it. So that ambiguous, which type of danger is it that we got from the last episode, is apparently clarified here as being both dangers, not one being misconstrued as the other. That's a very important point to bear out, because this episode seems to be very much about clarifying this whole trilogy's precept, or this whole trilogy's concept.
Yeah, that was something that I liked too.
Well, that was something that reminded me again of Star Trek V, because remember the false god being needed a ship? Why does God need a starship? And here, this dark side guy needs a ship.
Well, it's because he doesn't want to just influence the galaxy. He wants to go out and have some fun, too. So Anakin, meanwhile, has made his way to the Sun's Tower, and there he finds Ahsoka, who is a little bit different and gives the best Joker imitation I've seen in a long time.
See, I was thinking Harley Quinn, but I was right there on the same kind of like it creeped me out. But did you notice that Anakin once again does a miraculous feat of navigating this planet? Last episode, he gets from wherever the heck it was to start with to that big tower way off in the distance in what seems like record time. Here, he gets way up on the mountain that he's trying to climb, looks up, and the tower's way above him, and he still somehow makes it to the top of that in, again, record time. Yet it shows him making efforts to get there. It seemed to me like, man, they must be really getting force-fueled by this planet, because he seems to not need a Powerade or one of those little green drinks from Mandalore.
Distance is different when you're asleep.
Oh, here we go again.
Oh, wow.
Dark side Ahsoka is bad A, let me tell you. I kept drooling over Dark Side Ahsoka. I need that toy. I need that action figure. Mr. Hasbro, Mrs. Hasbro, if you're listening, please give me a dirty, dark, veiny Ahsoka, please. A Dark Side Ahsoka with the yellow eyes. I mean, that was the best part of this episode. The way Miss Eckstein changed her voice, it really felt Dark Side-ish. You know, it felt like Ventress. You know how Ventress has that kind of Dark Side raspiness to her voice? I mean, Ashley Eckstein really changed up her voice to where I could believe that Ahsoka was pure evil. You
really?
Know?
Really?
It gave me chills. Her voice gave me chills.
Am I alone on this? Because I really was disappointed in that. You know, I've met Ashley. She's a very nice person. Perhaps too nice to play an evil Ahsoka. I just didn't get the malevolence I wanted. And especially that little giggle, it didn't come off evil enough for me. I would have rather seen, especially that laugh, just modulated somehow or something, or maybe have the director really piss Ashley off beforehand so she's really mining anger and evil when she's doing it. You know, get some method acted going or something. I loved the look and I loved the delivery, but the overall tone of voice just wasn't quite there for me. I was just like, oh, it was so close. It was like,
wow. I can't believe I'm hearing that, because I had the total opposite reaction. Because if you go back and you listen to Ashley Eckstein speak as Ahsoka when she's calling him Sky Guy and kind of talking back and kind of being mouthy, she's kind of being the cute, you know, perturbed teen. She did not sound like that at all. It sounded like she was an evil, evil Sith master. I mean, I really had the total opposite reaction. I went into it thinking that, you know, how is she going to pull this off? She can't sound evil. And then when she had that little laugh and I don't need you anymore and just started attacking Anakin, it blew my mind. I thought it was great. I had a total opposite reaction. That is very interesting, Arnie.
Sith Lord, evil teenage girl, not that far apart.
Amen. I see that on a daily basis. Now, I think that we're sort of missing, at least, I guess, maybe, some of the aspect of the character. I don't think they're going for her to be Sith Lordy. They're just going for her to be dark side. If you think about Anakin back in Revenge of the Sith, before he gets the Vader armor and becomes more machine than man, he's still Anakin. He still has that Anakin tone of voice. He doesn't become, you know, more evil in the way he's saying it, though granted that may just be Hayden Christensen's acting. That's a whole other story. But he doesn't become all of a sudden this malevolently voiced character. It's not like Palpatine doing that modulated Darth Aveda when he's picking his name, which I think is the only other time we've heard the modulation outside of these episodes, possibly. I like the performance because it gave you the sense that she's still the same character, only unhinged and very Harley Quinn-like, and has that need to lash out in a sense. It's like something's broken inside her. Not so much that she's been corrupted, but she's been broken on the inside, as we see with the laugh and everything else. To me, it worked, and I had to sit there wondering. I guess there were two things that had me sitting there wondering. One being, she says she hates it when he calls her Snips.
And I heard the sound of 1,000 fanboys screaming in triumph, and then we're
exactly
suddenly silenced.
I'm hoping that will be the end of the Snips thing, but I doubt it because he immediately says it as soon as she's, you know, saved from everything. She also asked the question, though, has she made Anakin proud? And all these characters have their own specific flaws when they can go towards the dark side, Anakin's being attachment. I'm wondering if Ahsoka's need to make Anakin proud, her need for some sort of acknowledgement of her efforts from someone she looks up to, is perhaps her fatal flaw or her Sith flaw that could lean her toward a dark side direction in the future. That maybe, granted, this dark side version of Ahsoka vanishes, but perhaps some temptation to her, some issues she will go through in future episodes might be leaning towards that making Anakin proud angle.
It would be nice, but I'm just kind of fearing that we haven't seen enough foreshadowing and arcing outside of individual 3-episode arcs to make me think that this will be a theme revisited.
Really, Arnie? I mean, because even when she comes out of the dark side, right, and he taps her on the head, I thought he was going to stab her because she hands over the knife and to the brother after she takes it away from Anakin and Obi-Wan. And I really thought this was going to be the end for Ahsoka. And this is the second or third time that Filoni and crew have fooled me. The first time was in the battle of Point Rain, or that whole episode where they were in the tank with Barriss Offee. And I thought she was going to die when she get blown up. And now we have this here where she goes to the dark side. All of us fans know that something's going to have to happen with Ahsoka. And we know she's not in episode 3. So we're all hoping that we'll be able to going to see it on film, and that she's just not going to, you know, walk away and disappear like Maris Brood or someone. And I really thought she was going to get it. And I just cannot see how they plant the seeds of the dark side in Ahsoka after we got it in the first episode where her future self says that your master has planted the seeds of the dark side in you. And now in the second part of the arc where she actually goes to the dark side, I just don't see how they won't be able to touch this again. It's too much a part of Ahsoka now.
See, I'm with Arnie, though, from last episode, saying that that's, if we think she's going to go dark side and stay there, I think that's probably asking too much of this particular show because of who it's aimed at and the fact that this is a major character. Now, I will agree, though, it'd be nice if they were setting up the idea that later on maybe she goes dark or leans dark for a little while and Anakin has to pull her back. But it's hard to imagine them doing something to Ahsoka other than just somehow bringing her happily. She's alive. She's just out of play by the time of episode 3. As much as a lot of us would like to see something more dramatic happen to the character, how do you do that to the primary character in a show aimed specifically at younger audiences, especially given the effect that Ahsoka has had on young female Star Wars fans? Why alienate that audience? I don't see Filoni, Lucas, and company going that direction with her. Maybe going a little dark for a while, which would be great. There's, you know, possibly setting up future dramatic storytelling, but I can't see them setting up the end of Ahsoka in any sense here. Any more than I would say they set up the end of Ahsoka in Slaves of the Republic, the comic by Henry Gilroy tied into the series, where they talk about going and spending their time freeing slaves across the galaxy once the Clone Wars are over. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that. And if this were any of half a dozen other shows on Cartoon Network, I would say there is what they're going to do episode or season 4. Ahsoka, this dark side is going to come out in her. She's going to be Count Dooku's new assassin until the end of the series. And that would pay off. Not Star Wars. That's not how they're going to do Ahsoka. That didn't sound right at all.
And I would like to say, I would love to be wrong. I would love for them to do that to us. But yeah, I mean, I think of one of our listeners, Reverend Strone, and his little daughter, and she idolizes Ahsoka. And what would it do to the 5-year-olds across the world who idolize this character to see her turn evil? It's just I would love for them to do it. I would love for them to just completely play us as an audience. But I unfortunately, it just, the show never fails to feel like they're playing it safe. And it's because of the audience. And it's just, that's what the show is. And so I take it as such. But by the same token, it removes a lot of the risk when you know that there's a safety bubble around not just Obi-Wan and Anakin because they have to make it to episode 3, but also the majority of these main characters.
Yeah, it's a lot like reading Death Troopers and thinking, gee, will Han and Chewie be killed by the zombies? No, no, they won't. Thank you very much for playing. Goodbye. However, they handled the whole dark side Ahsoka thing better in this episode than I had thought, because I said in the last episode of Republic Forces that it felt somewhat disappointing to me that instead of having the whole idea of her going dark, at least for a little while, being in the main arc of the show outside of this weird mystical realm, that it had to be here. And it would feel somewhat cheap, like they just did it as a gimmick and then it was gone. But we don't get the tropes that we often see with characters going dark. It's not like she went dark and she was fighting it. She just went dark and she was, if not reveling in it, then she certainly had sort of cracked and was riding that right along. She gets the sword. She brings it to the sun. She has that moment where you think for a moment she's just going to drop it or give it over to Anakin, perhaps. And instead, she does hand it over. And she pays the price for that, either with nearly losing her life or losing her life, depending on what you think that the daughter did at the end of the episode in dealing with Ahsoka. They paid it off very, very well. She did evil. She paid the price and almost didn't come back from it.
So Anakin's having this half-hearted lightsaber duel with Ahsoka. You can tell he wants to defend himself, but not really attack her. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan has gotten the dagger and he's tipped off to this duel, and he makes it there in record time too, from atop a tower, very far away to atop the Sun's Tower. And we finally see Ahsoka light up her Shoto and take them both on, which she seems a little too happy about. And that was another line out of her. Ashley's performance didn't strike me as evil so much as just crazy. It was just nuts. And that goes along with what Nathan said about something inside her snapping.
Well, to steal Barron's phrase, I thought this was bad A. I was just loving this. I couldn't believe that this little Padawan was reasonably taking on two Jedi Masters. Now, it's very possible they were taking it a little light on her because they didn't want to, you know, decapitate her or anything. But also that she was channeling the dark side and showing Ahsoka's tough. She's come a long way since she first showed up on Christophsis. I mean, this got me. And I love the choreography of the fight. Everything here was just really working for me. And I was transported. I don't know that I've been this excited for a lightsaber fight since Revenge of the Sith, to be perfectly honest. I've just not been so energized by it.
Yeah, made for a really cool duel. You had that moment where she gets pushed back, she stabs both lightsabers into the ground, and it drags along, and you get that sort of fiery result from it scraping along the ground, sort of in the background. They're not making a big deal out of it because you're focused on the other characters, but it's there. It's a nice touch to it. It really was a well-done scene, and she uses the Shoto very well. It really was a well-done scene. I do find it surprising that one of the first times we ever see her, in fact, I think maybe even the first time we ever see her using both of those sabers, is against Anakin and Obi-Wan. Of all characters, I think she was going to use those two against for the first time. I would never have thought it would have been them. At least maybe we would have seen some other action sequences with them prior to this, but it really played out well, and she has some of those great, to use a comic book term, like a Rob Liefeld sort of set of poses that she goes through as she's fighting that may not be very practical, but certainly make for some very dramatic visuals. Of course, meanwhile, what do we have? We've got the fight going on between son and daughter, which begins with yet another one of those lines that make me sit there and think, yep, that's one of the lines Lucas himself wrote, because they always talk about his bad dialogue. If you stand in my way, then I guess we must fight. Are you kidding? Am I watching a bad kung fu movie here? I know there's Eastern references in the episode, but let's not take it that far. It really, really was a poorly done line. And give it to Sam Witwer. He delivered it with gusto, but you just can't.
You mentioned the fight between daughter and son, okay? And this is the fight that I wanted. You know, I wanted to see them use the Force, because they were the embodiment of the Force. Now they're not the embodiment of the Force. They're just these powerful Force users. But we've seen Jedi Master Yoda absorb Force lightning before, but we've never seen it like this. you know, where she catches the Force Lightning, the daughter's catching the Force Lightning, and she's turning around and shooting it back at, and it's kind of this dance, and she has her hands floated out there, kind of like karate, you know, Eastern learning a fighting stance, and I mean, it was great. I thought it was great with the red Force Lightning, and the last 15 minutes of this show was just scene after scene after scene of wow, wow, wow.
I'm just a little sad to see that the light side never has anything to go to. The dark side always goes to Force Lightning, but all the light side can ever do is catch it. They don't have anything to throw back, like crazy possessed butterflies or something.
And they also took the time to clarify once again, like they clarify elsewhere in the episode about what is it that we're seeing from last episode. We got the clarification here. We had postulated last time, is it possible that the Force users here are feeding off of the emotions of the other characters? That's why they'd want to manipulate them through the Force. Well, here we have it said flat out. When the daughter asks the son recognizes and acknowledges the fact that he's feeding off of the dark emotions coming from the other characters. So once again, more explanation weaved into a scene that doesn't feel like extra exposition.
All in all, it was a very good fight. And was it just me, or did the daughter's initial fighting stance remind you of that almost kung fu stance, just short of the come get some move that Obi-Wan whips out on General Grievous on Utapau in episode 3?
I thought it was more of the stance Yoda whips out on Dooku when he starts absorbing the Force Lightning in episode 2.
Ah, you know what? I didn't even think of that one. You're right. That is closer.
Much you have to learn, old one. Or something like that, he says, right?
Wow. That Yoda impression was almost as bad as your Dark Ahsoka impression. All right, so two excellent fights that culminate in Ahsoka turning over the dagger to the sun, and he thanks her by tapping her on the forehead and maybe or maybe not killing her. Now, I took this as she was dead. She was gone. And a little part of me jumped for joy. But we know that wouldn't last. Now, when the sun tapped her on the forehead, was that the same kind of gong sound that we got every time somebody tapped Savage Opress on the forehead?
Apparently in Star Wars, everybody's head is hollow.
And that's the whole forehead tapping to initiate things was another reason that makes me think somehow the mother from Dathomir is somehow tied to these folks. But whether or not that'll ever be pursued is another story for another time.
The brother does look like Mother Talzin, you know, has that same kind of stripy skin with the gray skin. I mean, that would be really cool if they brought that together, because they don't mention the mother. You know, who's the mother of these two unruly children? You know, it would be really cool if it was Mother Talzin.
The thing that gets me about this scene, though, with Ahsoka is that question of does she die, does she not? Because it goes back to the same thing, and I know I've said this plenty of times, of the reasoning behind, you know, Padme losing the will to live. Is it the Force choke that kills her, or is it that she loses the will to live, or is it some kind of combination? They recently had another very high-profile Star Wars story in which a main character is supposed to, at least if you read into what they want you to believe about the story, this character supposedly literally died. And somehow her love for another character brought her back to life. And I'm getting really tired of these types of endings in Star Wars stories, whether Lucas-driven or not. There's a point at which the fairy tale stuff has to go. Fantasy, yes. Fairy tale, no. Characters dying left and right, and they just come back to life? Now, granted, in this case, if any being could do it, it would be a being super powerful in the light side bringing someone back to life. It's at least more believable in this situation. But it's getting to the point where this let's play on the tropes of fairy tales and such is starting to wear really, really thin. I'm hoping at some point when there's an episode guide written up of this that is in detail from the StarWars.com folks, or perhaps from one of the episode guide books that Jason Fry does or something, that they will say that she was near death, not dead. If she was dead, it's that same crap we saw recently, and I don't buy it, and it kicks me out of the story to see it.
Here's what it reminded me of. Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
What?
Don't you remember Leia dies?
Well.
And Luke brings her back through the power of Obi-Wan and the Mind's Eye.
I think I must have blocked that out.
Yeah, it happened then. Leia dies from the wounds inflicted on her by Vader. And while holding the stone, Luke traces his finger over and revives her.
Kyber crystal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that it stunk back then. It stinks now. I don't buy the idea that we should have in Star Wars characters literally dying that can then be somehow brought back. I mean, we've got characters, you know, who will get grievously injured, like, say, a Darth Maul. You can contrive ways to do that. You've got characters where they might die in one story, then you go back and erase that story from continuity, and now they're able to be back in some future thing, as they've done in some cases. But to say a character in continuity literally died and then came back, you're pushing credulity to the point where some of us, like me, that are more sci-fi oriented than fantasy oriented, it's gonna kick us out of the story. That was the point where, on second viewing, when I wasn't as caught up in the action and caught up in the episode, I sat there thinking, what? I really hope she just wasn't really dead. Just like I can't bring myself to believe that Padme really lost the will to live. I'm more along the lines of Captain Typho, Gregor Typho, discovers within the Street of Shadows book, I think, where he's not believing she just lost the will to live. He knows at least a little bit about her medical background and such. I just can't get my brain around that. Maybe I'm just not metaphysical enough, or I'm just narrow-minded. One of the two. I look forward to your letters.
I'll be the first one writing one. How about that?
It took me out of the episode, too. I'm not going to lie. And it really made me... The reason it did is because I'm like, are they transferring the life essence from daughter to Ahsoka? And it reminded me of... I was like, are they doing this Callista thing again? Where it's... Is it going to be Ahsoka? I wondered when the eyes opened. Was it going to be Ahsoka? Was it going to be daughter? Was it going to be like Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin and all of me? What's going on?
Or will Ahsoka turn into the daughter? Will that be her path? Because now, basically, she has the daughter's essence or force inside of Ahsoka, right?
Maybe. Or maybe it was just the light side bringing her back. Now, you notice, though, what they've done here is they've opened it up so that you don't really need Anakin there anymore, okay? You don't need the Chosen One to bring balance between daughter and son, because daughter's kicked the bucket. So unless Ahsoka somehow takes daughter's place, there is no balance anymore. As the father says, evil has been unleashed, which is a nice reference for Sam Witwer and everything. But now it's just a matter of you either kill the son or he escapes somehow. There's no balance to maintain. The Chosen One doesn't need to stay there. So I hope this wasn't the real Chosen One prophecy, or it just kind of got pretty much invalidated, kind of tossed out the window here. But it definitely makes it so that unless Ahsoka is somehow being groomed for a role to stay here, yeah, right, then they've just provided the out for Anakin and for the rest of the universe, presumably, with the death of the daughter. Son must die.
Yeah, that struck me too. What's the easiest way to completely give us a nice little story, but then make this thing that could be so earth-shattering to the basis of the Force and just how the universe works, but you murder, kill them all before you leave, and it's all fine.
Even the most powerful light side and dark side beings in the galaxy or in the universe cannot defeat the Filoni one and done character models. Or three and done, as the case may be usually. It just doesn't rhyme. Three and wee!
Okay. So as we've alluded to, the son goes to kill his father and the daughter jumps in the way, taking the blow. She dies, but not before she transfers the last bit of her essence to Ahsoka, bringing her back to life. The father tells us that the balance has been upset. The Sith in your universe will gain power. It's on. Things are just going to get bad from here, which I thought actually kind of explains a little bit of the things we see in episode 3, that the Sith have grown more powerful and they're able to hide themselves from the Jedi.
The dark side clouds everything. Finally gets a little bit of an explanation.
That actually kind of worked for all the mumbo jumbo we've seen in these two episodes so far.
But wouldn't you have expected, when he says, you know, the Sith are going to be more control, war will continue to escalate, you know, that Obi-Wan or Anakin would, given how, especially Anakin, given how snarky he's been, you know, of course it was a tower, of course I saw it, or whatever. Given all the snarkiness of Anakin this episode, wouldn't you think he would have turned to the father and said, yeah, hello, where have you been the last couple of years? You know, things are going to escalate. Yeah, already have.
Yeah, this is a... With that line, this is an arc that would have worked better, say, beginning of the Clone Wars, and maybe that's why things have gotten so bad. Not necessarily as close to the end of the Clone Wars as we're led to believe this is.
I also like the fact that these episodes usually don't end with to be continued or to be concluded. They just sort of end, just like the Star Wars films do. They don't add that little tag at the end. You can imagine somebody thinking that this is the end of it and going, wow, I'm so bummed now. It's like one of the most depressing endings for a Star Wars episode ever. I think from a depression standpoint and from a wow, we're all doomed standpoint, this one beats any other episodes we've seen, and it certainly beats episodes 2 and 5 from the trilogies that we saw in the film.
It's definitely a bummer of an ending. All right, we've got a few voicemails this week.
Hi, this is Devin. I'm just calling back with another implication of a reaction to what I just saw in the current episode of Clone Wars. And you know what? I'm not sure what the heck I saw, except I got to say this. I know much has been made about the new character models, but what has gone completely unnoticed is the fact that this show has abandoned the way they choreographed the combat previously is what people in some recreation circles call voguing, which is more about striking a pose and getting into the next pose and the next pose on down the line. This episode, the combat was fast. It was fluid. It was nasty. I loved it. I want to see more. I'm really excited for the upcoming episode. I just wish it would hurry up and get here already because, actually, I take that back. I don't know if I wanted to get here or not because I'm enjoying this trilogy and I don't want them to hit the cosmic reset button on the plot structure after next week's, which is what they always seem to do after a trilogy. Anyway, thanks.
Bye. Strike a pose.
You know, he does have a point there. I mean, we talk about how the action has gotten more intense and we're liking the fight choreography more. I guess what we've been doing more is looking ahead and seeing the current fighting as opposed to looking back at the way that it was done before. He's right. It was very much, you know, kind of the Guybrush Threepwood. You get into a pose, you clash the lightsabers together, and you throw a couple snarky comments at the other character, and then you clash a couple more times and throw another couple snarky comments at them. You know, it's something that definitely you have to do with things like audio dramas. In fact, you can see the way that they translate the duels from Empire and Jedi, especially A New Hope to a degree, but especially Empire and Jedi when they did the NPR dramas, where you have to sort of take this relatively fast-moving battle, though not prequel speed, and then stretch it out and give it sort of those clash, clash, throw a few lines, clash, clash, throw a few lines. And they haven't been doing that as much. We do get lines in the middle of the fighting, but it definitely doesn't feel quite as much as if not only is it choreographed by the animators, but almost as if the characters choreograph themselves to make sure they get their little verbal jabs in.
All right. How about our next voicemail?
Hi, everyone. It's Robert Darzakari calling in for Republic Forces Radio Network. With my thoughts about Ultra Mortis. Pretty interesting episode. I really am pretty clueless at this point as to where they're going with all of this. I mean, obviously, animation has been beautiful. The facial models obviously vastly improved over previous seasons, and I'll tell you right now, the moment that they issue that new Ahsoka figure in her new outfit, I'll be customizing up a Sithy version of her. I really enjoyed Ashley Eckstein's performance in this episode. The whole kind of, it was kind of a little more so than I even would have thought. And I feel bad I'm blanking on his name, but the actor who played the son, who was also the apprentice in the Force Unleashed game, it's funny because you can really tell his voice, especially when he screams the "I hate you" line, because it's pretty much straight out of Force Unleashed. But I was particularly fond of his little exchange with the daughter and Obi-Wan, where he made the comment about the father of, you know, it being so selfish and refusing to die. I just thought that was just wonderfully cold. As for next episode, I don't know. It just seems like the whole possibility that this whole arc has been a dream, possibly. Because, I mean, how in the world are they going to have characters knowledgeable of the end of Revenge of the Sith at this point? Of course, you can always have Anakin dismiss it that he doesn't believe this will happen, but I mean, good grief. I mean, you cover just about everything that happens in the last half hour in that one little snippet there. So, but we'll see how they do or what they decide to make this thing all about. But call you in after next episode and see where we are. Have a good one, guys. Thanks. Bye.
I think he's making a very good point. All of us at one point in time have mentioned this in one of the seasons. Is that the knowledge, how much more knowledge can these people learn and still have episode 3 make sense. And I think one of the big ones, Nathan, that you have was Mace Windu. You know, he kind of in episode 3, they kind of act like they don't really know each other, but we've seen that they've battled with each other and the whole Boba Fett thing going on. So, you know, this is just another issue where they just kind of have to make it work somehow. And they will.
I've got a couple thoughts on that, but I think I'm going to hold them until we start talking about next week's preview specifically.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get our third voicemail.
Hi, this is Austin. I am calling in with my review of the Star Wars Clone Wars episode, Altar of Mortis. Okay, the thing that stuck out at me for this episode was how much work they had put into, and how much Ashley Eckstein had put into Ahsoka. You see her completely change, the entire flip coin of her own personality. Just the animation and the facial patterns as she's dark, as you could call it, were just absolutely amazing. They've really, really come far with this. One question I had was, what was this strange dagger that they had? I bet you'll probably cover that in the show, but if you could clear it up a little bit, that would be most interesting and clear up a lot of stuff that I bet people are going to be asking questions about. And as this episode goes, it is a fairly okay standalone. They should, now that I look at it, they should have played this one and Overlords as a one-hour special and made this a four-part story arc, because last episode really didn't give us that much besides setting the groundwork. This really filled it all out. We had the first two episodes where they got there and introduced the storyline of the evil son trying to take power, and now we got the next one episode, we should have two, where we see the Jedi, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka go to stop him. This should decide whether or not this entire story arc is a good one, but I'll leave it up to you guys to discuss the rest of it. Okay, thanks. Bye.
I mean, the dagger, I kind of mentioned the Golden Child earlier with the Dagger of Ashanti. That's kind of another one of these recurring themes in fantasy, to go to what Nathan was saying, storytelling, isn't it? That there's always this one mystical MacGuffin that you have to have.
Yeah, it seems like it. But I mean, at the same time, Star Wars, in a sense, has not usually been using that type of trope. So I guess in this episode, at least, it felt like classic fantasy, but at the same time, it felt like, to me, almost like a welcome addition. Give us a way to somehow harm these beings. Give us something that they cannot get to. Of course, obviously, as soon as we know that she can't get to it, we know that he also can't get to it. So, of course, Obi-Wan pulling it out of there is going to put both of them in danger, and you can sort of see somebody dying a mile away. But it was nice. I mean, aside from things like the Kyber crystal, Star Wars is usually more about missions or save this person or that sort of thing. Much less, it seems, about the MacGuffin you've got to find. Maybe the MacGuffin you've got to destroy, the super weapon of the week thing. But I don't know. It felt okay in this episode, even if it is kind of a standard storytelling technique.
Next week, they've got to throw the dagger in Mount Doom to destroy it.
Which works fine because they've already got the tower from Sauron, and they say in the episode guide that it was purposely designed after Sauron's staff, right? You know, though, that if they do have to drop it off and destroy it off of Mount Doom, Anakin will be able to get there in record time again.
And perhaps somebody will bite off one of his mechanical fingers. But they're going to these fantasy tropes, and they have a character from Final Fantasy in it, so it all seems to work out, doesn't it?
We want to thank everybody who called in this week. Remember, you too can leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you thought of the latest episode of Clone Wars at 415-508-JEDI. And as long as you get us that before midnight Saturday, we'll get it on the next show. All right. Now, we did get a preview for next week's episode, The Ghosts of Mortis. Or is it Ghost of Mortis? It was Ghosts, wasn't it?
The Ghosts of Future Past, apparently.
Where we see Anakin getting visions of his future from the sun. It's interesting to see some scenes that we know and dialogue that we're used to from episode 3 and beyond being depicted using voice actors and character models from the current series.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how well that plays out. You know, it's very interesting to hear these lines coming from these actors.
And from what I've seen in the preview, it looks pretty cool. It looks pretty cool. I have some questions about how Anakin sees Darth Vader and, you know, how that makes his decisions. But I guess, you know, we will see that next episode.
Speaking as a continuity guy, I loved this idea. I've always kind of liked seeing voice actors or people portraying characters that someone else originated and seeing how they handle it. I'm one of those guys who've been clamoring, it'll never happen, but have been clamoring to see a remake of the original Stargate movie with the Stargate SG-1 actors in it. You know, I'm that sort of fan. I like to see the connection. I like to see different portrayals. I about crapped myself when I saw this preview. You know, it blew me away. Granted, there are questions as to how much can they know, but it looks like they're handling it fairly well. And the thing I've been seeing a lot of fan chatter on is, yeah, but they're using the Clone Wars character models instead of the way that they look in Episode 3. Yes. Yes, they are. And what better way to hide Padme's pregnancy than to use a character model from a pre-pregnant Clone Wars cartoon series Padme? Of course they've got to make her look like she is now. Otherwise, you're giving away the pregnancy to Anakin.
Yeah, I thought that was really actually well done, because just like the visions we saw in the first episode of this arc, they're using images that are current in his mind. They're not showing him people that are unrecognizable or things that are going to make him say, wait, well, she's pregnant and she's choking. Is she going to lose the will to live? So
always comes back to losing the will to live.
So, yeah, what I really liked about the preview is the way, obviously, the son is putting his own. Yes, he's showing what's going to happen in the future, but he's kind of putting his own spin on it, because the way Obi-Wan is giving his line, I can't remember if it's the "you were the chosen one" or
"you were my brother, Anakin."
Yeah, "you were my brother." He's not. It's not the regretful walking up the hill, mournful tone that Obi-Wan has in Episode 3. It's the "I'm really not happy with you." He's livid and going off on him. So I don't think things are going to be presented to Anakin true to form, per se.
You know, Dan, you said that they're not seeing things they don't know, but we all saw Darth Vader's head there, right?
That is true. But, you know, he saw the Tartakovsky series, too. Doesn't know he knows. It doesn't mean he necessarily knows what the heck that means for him. He just keeps seeing this image.
This is true, though this would be the first time I think that he would see it, because the Tartakovsky segment with that is the one immediately before Revenge of the Sith. What I'm interested in is, I mean, there's a lot of things about this episode that seem like they're going to interest me, but I'm curious if we're seeing visions of Episode 3 era characterizations of Anakin and Obi-Wan, what about Ahsoka? Keep talking about the whole idea of, well, what's going to happen to her by the time of Episode 3? Maybe we'll get a hint. And perhaps we're getting a hint as to how this whole Mortis trilogy fits into everything, with the line coming from the son of, you know, "he's mine now." Maybe this is something Anakin doesn't truly escape from. Maybe this is where this whole metaphysical balance of light and dark can shape the balance of the rest of the universe and affect Anakin's fate and the Chosen One and all that metaphysical gobbledygook that only barely sort of make sense when you take the films and connect it with the cartoon series right now. Maybe we're going to be given sort of a more metaphysical reason behind why Anakin is essentially fated to go dark. Personally, I think that would weaken him, because it changes it from being a choice to being, oh, well, you were just destined because you screwed up when dealing with the sun. But it's got potential to affect things, it seems.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us to discuss the Altar of Mortis. Look forward to coming back to you next week with the conclusion to this story arc. I want to thank Arnie, Barrett, and Nathan for joining me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Bye.
Talk to you guys next week.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars, and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
So we flash ahead to the Sun's Tower, where he has Ahsoka imprisoned, and his little minion, at least I guess that's what we're led to believe
that's
at first.
Him. That's
well, I know that it's him, but she doesn't know it's him, and it doesn't act like it's him. It acts like...
But aren't you our omniscient narrator?
No, I'm not. Not. No, I'm just your buddy pal Dan, who watches the show with you. The son has attacked the father. The mother. Bad. The daughter.
She did evil. She paid the price and almost didn't come back from it. Unless, of course, we just want to say that after giving up the blade, which looks so shiny, she'd lost the will to live.
Shiny.
You guys said last time, it always comes back to losing the will to live. So there you go.
That's how the father's going to die next episode. He's just lost the will to live.
He's lost the will to live. The feathers are falling off of his like magical, you know, Castlevania-like wings that grew this episode.
He's just not losing that will fast enough, so let's push him down some stairs.
No, if you want to make him lose the will to live, you need to like berate him and you need to force choke him, because force choking always makes you lose the will to live, apparently. And then you just switch a mustache and you come back in the room.
Wow, that was an awesome four different thing reference. Good job, Nathan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week, except when I'm not.